This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Fredericksburg has been the go-to spot for travelers in the Texas Hill Country for close to a century. Peaches are distinctive here in Fredericksburg, as all the growers produce their sweet and tasty treats for the local roadside fruit stand market. The local market demands are so strong that no growers have to worry about shipping to faraway wholesale markets. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a conversation with the patriarch of Fredericksburg Peach Empire, Mark Weiser, whose family started growing peaches for the roadside market back in the 1920s. There's more to the Fisher and Weiser roadside story. Almost by happenstance, the family started crafting jellies as an afterthought. The jelly sideline exploded with the introduction of their chipotle raspberry sauce that grew to become the number one seller in the entire United States, not to mention a strong demand in Mexico and overseas. In the countryside surrounding Fredericksburg, there are other family peach producers with their own unique twist on their roadside enterprises. Jamie Vogel and his family have been producing sumptuous peaches since 1953. At Vogel Orchard, in addition to fresh peaches, this is the place to pick up a watermelon, blackberries, cantaloupes, plums, and tomatoes, in addition to an array of jellies and preserves. In the fall, families flock to Vogel Orchards to experience their pick-your-own pumpkin patch. A super popular stop for families is Jensky's Orchard's You Pick experience. In nearby Stonewall, Berg's Corner Fruit Stand has been around for decades. The family farms started back in the 1940s. Their ice cream parlor serving killer peach ice cream is just as popular as their fresh peaches. There's much more to Fredericksburg. The town was formed back in 1846 by German immigrants. All things German remain central to the allure of the town. Of course, the annual Oktoberfest has been a big draw for decades. And the burgeoning industry of wine tasting rooms has exploded in recent years, but German cultural themes stream throughout the town. For example, in the heart of downtown Fredericksburg, Otto's German Bistro has been a big hit since it opened 7 years ago. The story of Fredericksburg history is brought to life at the Pioneer Museum, where docents like Evelyn Weinheimer shares fascinating tales of the cultural evolution in the town, where some of the old-timers still speak German in their homes. Last but not least by any means is Fredericksburg's Coffee House, where locals savor the culinary delights in addition to a cup of joe. Mark Weiser, Fisher & Weiser here in Fredericksburg, Texas. What a pleasure to see you again.
Oh, so nice to see you back.
Let's reel back in time family history here and how the peach world happened for your family.
I guess kind of like accident. I grew up with peaches, but doing some digging into history, I discovered that peaches were not always a crop in the Pedernales Valley at all. It was a cotton-growing valley. Of course, all of Texas was producing king cotton. That was just the thing to do. So after World War I, the price for cotton just absolutely collapsed, and I think from 45 cents down to 9 cents a pound. And a lot of the farmers in those days didn't go to the bank to borrow money. They went to the people that bought your cotton, and they usually had grocery stores, and so you bought your groceries, your fertilizer, your seeds, everything you needed on credit. And then when the cotton crop was brought in, they of course bought the crop and then expected you to pay off your bill. Well, when cotton prices fell from 45 cents a pound down to about 9 cents, 7 cents a pound, a lot of people didn't know what to do except to try to plant more cotton, and that of course depressed the price completely. You can let that go by just so many years if you're the man providing all the provisions, and they were getting kind of concerned. I think they called them a mass meeting, and they advertised it in the paper. Big headlines, mass meeting, all the cotton growers show up. And so 450 of them showed up at the second floor of the courthouse. It was overflowing, people going down in the streets. And the merchants decided that they needed to organize a cotton association and elect officers. And then they wanted the officers to tell them exactly how they planned to pay their bills next year. This is October 1926. Of course, my dad was an immigrant from Germany.
When did your dad come over?
In 1914, 1 month before the war broke out in Europe. In 1917, he had already graduated from college. He had his law degree, had learned English, and opened up his practice in Hamilton, and the war broke out, and Hamilton and Heiko was kind of at the heart of the KKK, and they sure didn't like Germans, and so he always told the story that after they hanged the other one, he thought he'd leave, and so he took the train and came to Fredericksburg.
Wow.
And been here since 1917, and started practicing law, which was illegal at the time, too.
Really?
Yeah, if you were a German national, you couldn't have a job, according to President Wilson. He
didn't. Wow.
So he was an alien, and he couldn't leave, and anyway, he practiced law, the hell with Wilson. So he attended the meeting, and having grown up on a beautiful lake between Switzerland and Germany, it's called the Bodensee, or Lake Constanz, and in that area they grew a lot of grapes and pears and peaches and plums and all the fruits that you can imagine that close to Switzerland. He was elected secretary, and then he suggested, hey, why don't you all plant fruit trees, you know, make an industry out of that. By 1935, I counted 31 growers, farmers, that had started to plant orchards. And of course, when you make a statement like that, you need to put up or shut up yourself. He had already bought some land, but he bought these 60 acres and decided to put out an orchard. The far corner down there, he planted 600 peaches that were called Augberters. Produced their crop in August.
Oh, interesting.
That you can't find an Augberter anymore. Those peaches were kind of like hearts. They had a sharp point on them. And, of course, A&M has made peaches round. And when I started out, we never had red peaches in early June. They were all yellow.
Oh, interesting.
Skin, no color whatsoever. Now you have red peaches beginning with early May.
How many varieties do you have today?
We have, I think, 24 in this orchard. It's almost 20 years old, and it's time to replant it. And I think we're putting about 20 new varieties in the new block. Pretty much the same peaches that we have. A&M's developed some great early peaches, so we start picking around normally the first week of May, and the peaches have color, and they're pretty and good flavor, and we continue through August.
Oh, nice. So your whole world as a family business, haven't you started a peach stand, and you were involved in that, right?
Well, I was the last of five kids, and then it fell to me to help my mother pick peaches. I didn't exactly like that, but...
This is like junior high, high school?
This is the beginning of junior high. I was the last one left at home, and so I was the one that had to get up early, and my mother milked two cows and fed five kids on this farm all before breakfast. But anyway, so we hauled all the peaches up, walked them out of the orchard since we had no pickup or anything like that. And I watched my mother sort them out, and then almost like a miracle, people drove into the yard in the afternoon and bought peaches. And I thought it was kind of strange that we never had a peach sign. One summer, my mother asked me to paint one, so I got a piece of wood out of the barn and painted peaches on it and hammered it on a telephone post, and I was amazed at how people responded to that. So that became a seasonal thing, and by the time I got into high school, I wanted a better place to sell them from. I had already moved out to the curbside later on and would sit there until they were all sold. And so I wanted a nice little stand, and I got some logs and built kind of a Tahiti-type hut. And wow, it really worked, and I just loved it.
Is that still out there?
No, that fell apart a long time ago. I probably had to dismantle it because everywhere my dad's cedar post he had just bought. And he let me do a lot of stuff, but he was not in favor of me growing peaches. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can plant a tree and pretend you're a farmer, but right. To be a farmer is a different ballgame.
Interesting.
So I got shipped off to A&M when I graduated, and I got a degree in history and German. German is my first language, and I became a teacher. But
Taught at Texas A&M?
Got my first job in Seguin, Texas, and stayed there for 9 years and fell in love with teaching. It's a wonderful profession. Finally was able to get a job here in Fredericksburg and So I could do both. I could raise peaches and take care of the trees in the winter on weekends and sell them all summer. Didn't have to go to work anywhere else. It was really a perfect thing. But I wanted a really nice place to sell peaches from. And I just didn't want to sell them over the fence, and I just didn't want a plain old shed. And so I was looking for something unique. I didn't know exactly what, but my friend's mother happened to mention that a friend of theirs was tearing down a log cabin, and why didn't I go out there and visit with Mr. Lochte and see if he'd sell them to me? And so I did, and he was tearing down an 1870 log cabin built by the Koenigs. Asked him how much he wanted for them. He said, I got to have $150. I said, oh, that's a steal. I didn't tell him that. Right. Said, okay, I'll give you $150, and I'd like to have all the rocks that were put in. And he says, oh, that's an extra $10. So I wound up spending $160, and I didn't have any money to put the cabin back together, so I spent the summer of 67 hauling them log by log into town and putting them in the barn. And then in the spring of 69, my peaches were getting ready that I had planted. I needed a stand, and so I borrowed almost $5,000 and hired a carpenter to put the log cabin together. And we opened up, I think, on June 19th, 1969.
And that log cabin is still out front.
Yeah. It did what I wanted it to do, to attract not only people that liked fresh peaches, but liked old buildings. Mm-hmm. And I loved old buildings. I've restored several of them in town. I restored my 1892 house. I restored a bungalow on the farm. I restored the Weezer building on Main Street. I just love old buildings, but in 69, I knew this was working. And I had asked my mom to make some jellies just as an afterthought, and I had a little shelf on the wall and put the jellies on the shelf, and I think we sold the jars for 50 cents apiece. But I knew I had another line, and so peaches and jelly, what more could you ask for? So we started expanding the line, and that's how we grew into a jelly business as well as into a peach business.
And there are some people around America that don't know you as a peach grower. They know you as a jelly provider. And your jellies are in Costco and, H-E-B stores, retail around the country.
We're in every major grocery chain in North America. Not every grocery, but major grocery chains. I can mention Kroger, for example. We have to be in the right store in the right neighborhood. Our jellies are not cheap. They're not made with corn syrup. There's a big difference between jellies made with corn syrup and made with sugar. So we always wanted to provide the real taste and the real item. Corn syrup is cheaper. You can make more of it, but it's not the same flavor.
And you have some real flavorful, zesty jellies that have changed the whole landscape.
Yeah, I was kind of blah with it. You know, I thought, well, we'll do agaritas, we'll do cactus, and of course we already had grown up with wild Mustang grapes and things like that. But the young man that I hired back in 77, I think, is when it was. Yeah, 76, 77. To work for me and to thrash agaritas really had all the potential for exploring new flavors. And he went off to A&M and came home in 88 with a beautiful bride, and had studied food science at A&M, and that opened up a whole different world for him, the exploration of flavor. So while I was making this plain old Mustang grape jelly, he wanted to make jalapeno and Mustang grape jelly, or jalapeno and peaches, and jalapeno and apricots, or some other pepper, trying to make them spicy. And back in the 80s, people were not involved in spicy jellies. I mean, I remember we made our first jalapeno jellies and brought them out, and people said, what do you do with them? I mean, wow, who wants to do that? And we'd have to suggest, get a bar of fillet of cream cheese and pour it over the top and get some crackers and try it that way. And we even named that the National Hors d'oeuvre of Texas. But that was the beginning of bringing in spices, so to speak. So when Case came home, he began to work with flavors. He began to experiment with different profiles. What's new? What new flavors can we put together? And we opened up at the World Trade Center in Dallas. We started trying to find markets for our jams and jellies, and so we had a showroom, and we went up three times a year for Dallas market. And our purpose was to get accounts so we could make the jellies and sell it to them. And in that process, we met two individuals. One was Bud Royer from Round Top Cafe, and the other one was Rusty Fendon, who was basically a consultant. If you wanted, if you had a lot of money and you wanted to open a national restaurant chain, he's the man you went to. Both of them delightful individuals, and they became good friends, especially with Case, and they started helping him and suggesting flavors. And Rusty suggested using the chipotle pepper. Well, nobody in America except Rusty had heard about the chipotle pepper at the time. We didn't know what they were. And so Case started working with chipotle and strawberries and peach and so on. He would send samples of those batches back to both of those guys, Bud Royer and Rusty Fenton, and says, what do you think of this? Then he did the roasted raspberry chipotle sauce and sent off the samples. And believe it or not, within 15 minutes of each other, they called and said, stop. Whatever you've got there is unbelievable.
Wow.
And that became the original roasted raspberry chipotle sauce.
And that really changed the landscape nationwide of that culinary taste, didn't it?
It changed everything.
Yeah.
And I suppose if you're starting a business and we look back on it, it's a miracle. We would have been happy just making jellies all the time, you know, as a way of life. But now you have a product that becomes voted the best product in America, the best-selling product, a product you can taste to somebody, give to somebody, and they'll buy it. And we actually demonstrated that at Oktoberfest in 96. We always set up a big 20 by 20 foot booth, and we cooked apple butter, and we had all our jellies there. And Case put me in charge of tasting, I think we had 5 sauces. And honest to God, everybody that tasted the roasted raspberry chipotle sauce, I won a bottle. That night, Friday night alone, we sold 22 cases, 12 bottles each at $9.95 a bottle.
Nice.
And we went, whoa!
And that was just the beginning.
That was just the beginning. And then stores, Scott Silverman from Rice Epicure in Houston, started ordering 50 cases at a time. And we had a few other groceries like that, and we didn't know anything about the fancy food show. But they nominated us as having the best-selling product in the United States in 1997.
Wow.
And we were one of 1,400. We were notified that we were finalists. We were down to 5. Case and I couldn't afford to both go up to Dallas, so I'm up to New York. So Case flew to New York, and absolutely we won first place. We won our first Sophie Award, which is the highest award you can win in the food business.
And I see a whole room full of awards in there.
Yeah, I think we won 11 more.
Yeah.
Our challenge now is to win one every year. It's so hard to do.
But you're in Costco. You're all over the place.
With Roasted Raspberry Chipotle, we've been in Costco, I think, going on 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
They were the first. Grocery wouldn't look at us. Meh, get out of here. Costco took a chance on us only because Case offered them a pallet free. Put it on your floor.
Taste it. See how it goes.
Yeah. See what happens. And they've been our customer ever since.
That was smart marketing.
Case is always very smart. We ship a lot of Roasted Raspberry Chipotle to Mexico.
Oh, interesting.
It's it's
hot
a huge
seller, yeah.
It's kind of ironic that we take a chipotle pepper from Mexico and a bunch of Germans mix it up and sell it back to Mexico. But we're also in Canada. We've been in the UK and in Germany, but they're not too hot on spices yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll give them some more time. We do a lot of export, but we also discovered there are all kind of barriers in exporting American product. It's not fair.
I hate to say it. I could spend all afternoon with you, but
you can join me on the tractor. I was just shredding over there.
Yeah. I think they're ready to go.
Okay.
So you know what that means, Mark? I got to come back to Fredericksburg and do a part 3 with you.
Please do. It was so great to see you again.
Yeah, wonderful.
Maybe someday you'll move back home.
Yeah.
Okay.
I look forward to that.
All right.
Mark Weiser, thanks for sharing. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Fredericksburg, Texas. We'll see you down here. We are here at Vogel
Orchard, yes,
Vogel
sir.
Vogel Orchard. And also tractors.
Yeah.
I love tractors.
It's our other business, yes, sir.
And that was your dad that started that?
It was. It was a sideline business to the farming of peaches, and we raised some cattle as well.
So your mom and dad, what, early 50s, decided to do peaches?
Yeah, they married in 1951, and we had land that was very suitable for peaches, and the peach growing was becoming popular here in the area. So they planted their first orchard, which was very small, in about 1953. Then we put up our first roadside stand here on the highway in about 1972.
So agriculture in the county probably has been and in many ways remains retail and roadside rather than major wholesale distribution.
Yes, that is true. There is a lot of farming, a lot of agriculture in this area. It is a beautiful area. It's become very well known to tourists. A lot of folks travel here from around the state and all over the world for that matter. Because of the German heritage in Fredericksburg and all of the architecture and the many draws to this area, and agriculture continues to be a draw, and peaches especially, and now wine has become a part of that as well.
So you grow some other crops too, don't you?
Yes, we grow some blackberries and plums as well, and we'll do pumpkins in the fall. My wife has a pick-your-own pumpkin patch right beside our roadside market that folks will come to during October, and that's become very popular, especially with the folks around San Antonio and Austin.
So today is strange days for us, and that COVID-19.
Yes.
Well, how have you adjusted? How is it working out?
Fortunately, we have never gone to having our roadside market be completely enclosed and air-conditioned. Mm-hmm. It's really an outdoor, open-air type market, and that has been a really good thing this year because it's a lot safer with the breeze and the fresh air, and we do have a circle driveway in the front, and folks can roll up and roll their window down and wave at us, and we'll serve them that way. So it hasn't been too much of an adjustment for us. And I will tell you, it's been interesting this year that we have seen all-time record sales starting right before Memorial Day. Had our largest Memorial Day weekend ever, and has been crazy ever since then.
How do you explain that?
I think people were just wanting to get out, and this is something they view as a safe activity, so they're coming in droves this year. It's crazy.
That's really interesting. Some places are struggling to survive.
Yes. Yeah. And we're really flourishing this year. I think the timing on it was good. I will tell you that in April, I was really concerned about what are we going to do, if we end up with a big crop to get rid of all the peaches, and we talked about taking them to the cities, shipping and a lot of those things. And as it is with us having only a so-so crop, but a decent crop, we haven't been able to keep ourselves supplied for part of the season.
So pretty much every day when somebody rolls in here and they see the fresh peaches, they are picked that morning, right?
Yes, that's what we try to do. We try to pick and sell pretty much in the same day. We're not growing for commercial markets where they're shipped, they're put in coolers, maybe days before they get to the consumer. Most of our peaches are being put into the hands of the consumer the day it comes off the tree. So we can pick them with really good color, which means they're going to have the maximum flavor. You can't pick them all soft. You have to pick them firm enough that they will last until the folks get home, at least.
Right, almost right.
Almost right, yeah.
I love it.
And there are a lot that will come off the tree soft.
All right, well, anything you want to add that I haven't asked?
Well, I mean, Terry and I love what we're doing here. We both had other careers before, and we moved back to take over this business, raise our family here. We are anticipating that we'll have another generation coming in very soon as well. Our two kids are off and married, and it looks like one of them is going to be involved in the business here soon again at some point. So we have an opportunity here to pass on something that's part of our heritage, something we love to do. Got a lot of nice folks that have been coming here for many years. We have people that have come here that remember me when my mom was pregnant with me in the summer of 1969 and have continued to come, plus, their generations beyond that.
So like you, kids who were kids when they first came are now parents of kids.
Or grandparents or whatever it may be.
That's really cool.
They've been coming here for a long time.
So it's a family affair.
Right.
So to learn more,
Vogel Orchard, V-O-G-E-L, Orchard, no S on the end, .com. Of course, we have a Facebook page, we have a closed group, and we have an open page as well that folks can join.
Thank you for sharing.
All right, thanks a lot, Tom. And once again, my name is Jamie Vogel with Vogel Orchard in Fredericksburg, Texas.
Jamie, thanks so much for sharing. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting, Fredericksburg, Texas. We'll see you here.
My name's Kristen Rustani. I am part of the family that operates Berg's Corner. We've been growing peaches. I'd be technically the third generation now. Right now, it's run as a family business, but many years ago when it first got started, it was actually started as a peach co-op.
When it was a co-op in the late 40s, were you involved in your family?
My family was. Of course, I wasn't.
Prior incarnation.
Right. My grandfather, he did. And actually, prior to peaches, we all grew peanuts. So as soon as peaches kind of became a thing, a lot of the peanut farmers plowed under their fields and planted peach trees.
Mm-hmm. So no more peanut growing here?
No. Like Mason County, north of here, they grow peanuts. But Gillespie County, it's no longer a thing.
So would peaches be one of the biggest crops in Gillespie County?
It's still one of the bigger fruit crops. Of course, you're starting to see a lot more of the vineyards, but what you find with the vineyards is still, when it comes to acreage and size, most of these vineyards are small acreage. You know, an 8-acre vineyard would be large, whereas we grow 85 acres in peaches. And so acreage, yeah, there's still probably peaches most prevalent fruit.
And harvesting?
Harvesting is all by hand.
Wow, because that's labor intensive.
They're very labor intensive. Yeah. Because basically what you find, they're a very fragile fruit. So the only way you can do it is actually by hand picking.
It's interesting about the peach. Not only do you have to hand pick, but I understand that there's this short optimal life of the peach that you have to really quick get them out there.
Right, exactly. So sometimes people ask what makes our peaches so special. One of the biggest factors in getting a good tasting peach is picking them as ripe as possible.
That's another thing about that fruit. Some fruits you can pick a bit green, right?
Right.
And let them get optimal later. But is it true that the peach you have to pick at that prime?
Yeah, you can pick them when they're still firm, but we pick them to be about 4 to 5 days out from being ripe and ready to go. At that point, you're definitely seeing color on them, blush, that sort of thing. If you pick a peach too green, they'll just shrivel and don't really get color, whereas like if you get a banana green, it'll turn yellow.
Right, yeah. Would it not follow that the best way to market them would be your roadside sales?
Right, right, exactly. Once upon a time, we grew up to about, I thought I was going to sneeze, but it's not. Once upon a time, we grew actually up to like 300 acres of peaches. Mm-hmm. And we did deal with like HEB and Central Markets. And we just found it was too hard to get the quality fruit the way we grew it to those storefronts the way they like, and customer satisfaction a week later is just, it's hard. So what we do is we primarily focus retail. We do wholesale for what you say, like the roadside vendors. There's people in Austin and San Antonio that set up with a tent on the side of the road, and people often ask, are those really Fredericksburg peaches? Yes, they really are. Yeah. But that's kind of how we handle our peach sales.
That's cool. So the peaches that you see in HEB and whatnot, where are they typically from? They could be some Fredericksburg?
I highly doubt that you'll ever see Fredericksburg peaches in the grocery stores. Of course, marketing's really tactful, if you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But primarily, your mainstay of peaches grown in the United States is California, Georgia, South Carolina. And you start to see a lot of those. What I've noticed in our local HEBs and Central Markets, they're primarily from those states.
Right. Yeah.
You might see some from East Texas. They grow, Texas-wise, East Texas might grow a few more peaches than us.
So your market and your legend and your myth is all about fresh and local.
Right. Yeah. Most all of us growers, I think I can say this for all of us, is that we try to keep our peaches here. Not that we don't do a little roadside stand wholesales, but we try to keep them here. We enjoy people coming out to the Hill Country, visiting our stands.
Do you have a peach festival here?
We do, yeah. So it would have been last weekend, but it was canceled. But yeah, it's always the third weekend in June. So yeah, it's called the Peach Jamboree.
And then I bet at the Gillespie County Fair, there's serious peach cobbler contest.
So at the Gillespie County Fair, they have a whole fruit section, and then they have a baked goods and canning with preserves. So yeah, there's definitely always peaches there.
I love it. What's your favorite way to do a peach? If you could eat a peach anyway, would it be a cobbler, or you know, what would it be?
Probably peach pie is absolutely my favorite. I really, really like doing pies and peaches. I mean, maybe I'm biased, but I think the best pie is a peach pie.
With a little ice cream on the side.
Oh, yeah, for sure. A little homemade vanilla ice cream is pretty good.
Yeah, but I noticed in your little shop in there, you have
an ice cream stand in
there. Yes, yeah, we do ice cream.
So do you get a peach ice cream?
Yeah, we have a peach ice cream. That's definitely our top seller. It's like your traditional hard-scooped ice cream with frozen peaches in it.
And where are you located?
We're located here in Stonewall, Texas. Our address is 15194 Highway 290 East.
And how far from downtown Fredericksburg would you
be? We're about 15 miles east of Fredericksburg.
Uh-huh. So most of the people that come see you, are they locals and tourists who have come to experience Fredericksburg?
It's a mix. You know, I'd say about a third of the people are local based in this county, surrounding county. Mm-hmm. You have about a third who are out of town, people traveling specifically for peaches. You get people who will drive from Houston or wherever just for peaches. And then I'd say about the other third are people traveling and visiting the area, and they're swinging in to see what the peaches are all about.
And one more, roughly how many other peach independent producers are there in the county?
Yeah, so there's, there's probably about 8 to 10 of us, just guessing off the top of my head. I'm sure I'm missing a few, but
right.
The mainstay growers, yeah, you're looking at about 10 to a dozen of us. Mm-hmm.
And then in Berg's Corner, it's a family affair, right?
Yes.
So do you have brothers and sisters that work with you?
Yes, I have a twin sister, and she helps out. I actually have two sisters, but my twin sister's the one that's here. My husband helps out. My father and mother, we help out, and everybody kind of has their job. My sister and I co-manage this. Mm-hmm. My husband handles wholesale. And my dad, his love is the orchard, you know. So you don't always catch him in the store, but he's always out around.
Yeah. He's probably smarter than you guys.
Yeah, he knows. Yeah, he's like, I get to stay out with the peaches where it's pretty. And then my mom pops in and out wherever she's needed. She enjoys doing the ice cream counter visiting with people.
That's really cool. So on your card, you've got Caitlin.
Yes, that's my twin sister.
Okay, and Kristen. That's you.
Yes.
And then Jimmy.
Yeah, that's my father.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are the main three.
Yes, we're the main three here. Mm-hmm. So
you got Hill Country Harvest Incorporated, Berk's Corner, Stonewall, Texas, Caitlin. Awesome.
Yes, yes.
Kristen and Jimmy.
Yes.
How cool.
Yes.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Texas. We'll see you here at Fredericksburg Territory.
Roll out the barrel. We'll have a barrel of fun. Roll out.
I am Evelyn Weinheimer. We are in Fredericksburg, Texas, my hometown and the place I was born and raised in.
One of the things about Fredericksburg that I find fascinating, it has such a connected, timeless German connection back to the pioneer days.
Yes, we have been told that often. Growing up, I didn't realize how much we were, because certainly when you delve into our real history of how my ancestors got here, they didn't really care about, when I was growing up, about what was back in Germany, except for a few families, not all of them. But now we were very isolated from development, being as far as we are from San Antonio and Austin, and New Braunfels didn't have that, so they're not quite as German as we are.
Right, even though there's very much a German heritage in New Braunfels.
Right. Yeah. We just found it that, like, the different World War I, World War II, we tried to, families tried not to want, they didn't want to be suspect. They were Americans, and they did not hesitate to fight in any of the wars. Also, the Depression, we could handle it. I've listened to many interviews of generations, two generations back, who say, we raised our own food, we took care of ourselves. In fact, the crash was in 1929. The banks here didn't close until 1932.
Nobody told them.
Nobody told us. We didn't have TV. We didn't travel a lot. So we were pretty, again, isolated, as I said before.
But that German culture and heritage remains today.
Yes.
I mean, I think I remember you saying earlier that you grew up in the house where your family would speak German, and you speak German.
Yes. I was also the oldest grandchild on both sides of the family, paternal and maternal. Therefore, I spent a lot of times with my grandparents when my parents had to go do something. And so I would sit and listen to them. I also listened to a lot of their stories. which I even, my brother and my sister, within 4 years of my age, younger than I am, but they go, well, what was that? Well, do you remember that? And so I find myself being the matriarch now.
By default.
Yeah, by default, yes.
Another thing I remember from years ago hearing is that the colony of Fredericksburg was started, what, 1840s, right?
I know, 1846.
Yeah, 1846. So you had this wave of immigrants coming from Germany in the 1840s, 1850s. Most of them never went back. And so the German language that to this day is spoken in Fredericksburg, I was told that linguists come from Germany to study you guys because you froze German speech in the mid-18th century.
When I first started being a docent here about 18 years ago, I would start off when I knew I had a German visitor as my guest, and I'd start saying something in German, and then I'd hesitate, and they would say, no, keep going, you're doing fine, but you speak the German that your ancestors did when they left Hanover or Niederelbert or Saxony or Nassau, and so they find that very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's like history frozen in time.
Yes, yeah, so if you want to go back in time to what it was like in the 1840s, you can come visit us.
Speaking of the culture of German immigrants, you guys still revere the food, and you have very much a Germanic flavor of some of your restaurants.
We do. However, these restaurants now are managed by... There are many of the foods that we natives will talk to each other. My friends and I will say, oh, I hated cabbage. Oh, I hated spinach. Oh, you know, all these things, but I've gotten to where I like them. I don't ever remember us having a Wiener Schnitzel, but we do enjoy it now. We like for different celebrations, family, we'll go out and we'll have Wiener Schnitzel and we check them out.
But yet it definitely was not a part of your dinner time fare growing up.
No. Now, the one dish that many, many people who are not of Fredericksburg native ask us about is at nearly every family dinner when we'd all get together, somebody, when we had covered dish dinners, someone would bring sweet rice. It was not the dessert. It was part of the meal. And they always, some of them have said, I've gone all over Germany and I can't find it. But just recently, I've read a book that's, we're trying to get it back in print, written by the man who accompanied Moisebach to San Saba area to negotiate the treaty, and in one of their meals he talked about that rice, and I was like, see, they did bring that over, but maybe it's like a lot of things, they just go away, but yeah.
And how about music and dance, is that still revered and cherished?
Oh, yes,
here,
yes, the polkas. In fact, the local radio station every morning from about 8:15 to 9 o'clock will play polka music, and many of our residents who are now living in a nursing home will turn on their radios, and sometimes they have the nursing home director brings in somebody, an accordion group or something, and those residents of the nursing home just love that. And I myself, my husband and I, love to go dance. We started with the polka music. That's how I learned to dance. My dad would I didn't quite put my toes on his feet, but I was almost that age where I was small, and he said, come on, and he taught me how to dance.
Very cool.
And when I met my husband, that was one of the first attractions, was, hey, this guy can dance. So.
And one more, do you guys do Oktoberfest?
We do, however, with the virus, it's been canceled.
But historically,
strangely enough, that fest was started by what we call groups who had moved here as a fundraiser to help give arts students scholarships. At first, it was very well attended by natives. Not so much anymore, because they're like, the crowd is so big, we just don't enjoy it anymore. So, but yeah, that was started here. I have never been to an Oktoberfest in Germany. My sister has. They went 1 year, and they were there at the time when they could go to an Oktoberfest, and so have several others who live here and have been natives for many years.
Okay, and then central to why you and I are together today is history of Fredericksburg, and we are at a living museum, a whole park of historic buildings and whatnot. Tell us about what the highlights are that somebody would see here.
Well, I think the highlight of these 3.5 acres, which we call Pioneer Museum Complex, at 325 West Main in Fredericksburg.
Right in the heart of downtown. Walk from anywhere.
You can walk. The highlight here, I think, are the two old homes that are still in their original location. We have tried to tell their story. We now have a video room where we have a 9-minute video to tell the story. And our latest addition, it's $7.50 to go through the Pioneer Museum, but then for another $2.50, you go down the street about 2 blocks, is the Vereinskirche, which is a replica of the first church, school, and community building. And it's been just recent, well, it will have ribbon cutting this Friday, June the 26th.
And the original structure was built in what year?
The original was completed in 1847. And then after the 50th anniversary, the churches were no longer using it. We had 5 different denominational churches, although it was Catholic, Methodist, or Lutheran. And when they didn't use it anymore, they tore down the building. But then in 1935, it was rebuilt.
To learn more about the world of Fredericksburg history and culture,
you can go online to pioneermuseum.net. to learn more about our history. We also have an online store that carries an excellent source of books about the history of Fredericksburg. And my name is Evelyn Weinheimer. I'm the archivist and tour director here at Pioneer Museum in Fredericksburg, Texas.
Awesome. Evelyn, thanks for sharing.
My name's Lori Allen. You're at Coffee House in Fredericksburg, Texas, right in historic downtown.
And are you local girl? Did you grow up here?
I did not grow up here. I visited Fredericksburg for the last 40 years, and once my children grew up and moved away, I decided to make Fredericksburg my home.
Because this was kind of your favorite go-to spot.
Love Fredericksburg. It's always a great place to visit.
And so where did you grow up?
Well, I actually grew up in Tennessee, but I moved out here as a young adult to go to college. So I was in San Angelo for a lot of years, and then I moved here about 6 years ago.
Very cool. So here we are. You started a business about a year ago, right?
Yes, sir.
So,
yes.
And the name of the business is?
Coffee House. It's spelled German with the K and the H-A-U-S. So we decided to keep it German.
Yeah. Pretty much keeping in tune with the town.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Yes.
All of a sudden, you're halfway into it and getting comfortable, and then the world shifts on you.
Yes, yes. We were really starting to hit our stride, and things were going so well, and then this happened. But fortunately, it's not been devastating for us, and we're coming back very quickly.
And how do you think things are going here in Fredericksburg in reaction and response to the whole COVID-19? Have you noticed most people are willing to wear a mask and do the distancing and do the proper protocol?
Yes. The locals have been very good about the social distancing and wearing masks. Here in Coffee House, we make it optional. We prefer people to wear masks, but they don't have to.
Well, you almost have to take it off to drink your coffee.
You have to. Yeah. You have to. It's really hard to have coffee and a pastry with a mask on. Yeah. So, yes. So, but we do a lot to sanitize and keep things clean as best we can. Mm-hmm. But people have been very kind, and the social distancing have been great, even with our tourists, and which we depend on tourists for our businesses here in Fredericksburg. And the tourists have been very kind. And, you know, if we ask them if they're more comfortable with us wearing masks, we will definitely put one on. But they've been very good about sanitizing, so it's been fine.
Tell us about how life has shifted for y'all here in Fredericksburg.
Well, I think people are a bit more cautious, just trying to change the way that we do things just to accommodate people for COVID. But it's, you know, it's kind of gotten, you know, after about a month, you kind of just realize it's a way of life, and it kind of becomes our new normal. I know people get tired of hearing that, but it is kind of normal now, and which is probably good, and we probably should continue at least the hand sanitizing.
Do you think, you know, you read in the news about Houston and Austin just having an explosion of cases, and yet not so here from what I understand. Do you think it's because you're insulated?
I really do. We don't have the population that they do in those cities, so obviously I'm not sure what the numbers are per capita, but we've been very fortunate here, and most of the cases that we've had have been from people out of town that have gone out of town and brought it back, or like in families where it's multiples, or in the little nursing home, unfortunately. But we've been very fortunate here, and I don't really know why, except for we're just a smaller town, and we do just get the people on the weekends. And
right. But then a lot of people here are smart enough or whatever to not go driving over to Austin. I heard your daughter won't let you come
yes,
to Austin.
Yes, I have not left the county in 3 months. It's so funny because I was thinking the other day, I need to go somewhere and just do anything. But, yeah, I think people are less likely to travel right now.
Right.
So.
Okay,
yeah.
They call it the new normal, which is kind of the new abnormal.
Yes, the better word.
Yeah, I think so. So here we are, and your shop is open. And what do you serve? What do people come in for primarily?
Well, obviously we're a coffee shop, so we have a full espresso bar. And
you have food.
Do have food. Yeah. And I have my own personal pastry chef, who actually is my daughter, Kate.
Nice.
And she's amazing, and she actually drives in from Austin to bake for us. And we make everything from scratch. We do a lot of pastries too that are gluten-free and vegan, so we try to accommodate people that have special food needs. And and we also have a young girl that's working for us who is studying to be a pastry chef right now.
Aren't
so
you lucky?
Yes.
That's like double blessed.
Yes.
Yeah. That's cool. In what ways has your business shifted, changed from the what you thought you were going to be doing?
Well, not much. We've kind of kept it steady on. We're kind of known for our scones. We do a lot of different scones, and we do a lot of seasonal things. Like right now, it's peach season, obviously, so we do a lot of peach things. But we've just shifted toward paper goods for a little while because we don't want to. We do have our staff that we're trying to protect right now. But really, the coffee and pastries, that everything's kind of stayed.
Yeah.
And it's been very consistent, and we've been very fortunate. Yeah.
Do you have takeout people, and did you always?
We do have a lot of to-go people who just come in to get
grab
things
their
to go.
Coffee, yeah.
Yes, and
on
especially
their way to work.
Exactly. And then people, tourists who are just in, and they'll come in for coffee in the morning and go. We do have limited seating right now. We don't have all of our tables out. Just we're not supposed to be at 100%
to keep
yet.
The spacing. Wow.
Yes, and it's been that's been probably the hardest thing, not being able to accommodate everybody the way that we'd like to.
Yes.
So, yeah, that has been a change.
To learn more about your world, do you guys have a website? Or how would somebody
we
social
have,
media?
Yeah, Instagram, coffeehouse.fbg, and we do have our Facebook page, which is Coffeehouse.
And your name?
Lori Allen.
Lori, what a pleasure to meet and visit with you.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Fredericksburg, Texas. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative was recently awarded the prestigious Phoenix Award by the Society of American Travel Writers. HLRI was one of four recipients of the prestigious award that recognizes international organizations actively involved in conservation, preservation, beautification, and anti-pollution campaigns that further the growth and appeal of travel destinations.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
75 years ago, World War II ended. It was the deadliest military conflict in history, resulting in 85 million casualties. We mark the anniversary of the end of that war by celebrating the heroism of our greatest generation, those who served and those who supported their efforts at home. On September 2nd, we will commemorate the signing of the Articles of Surrender aboard the battleship Missouri Memorial at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, a celebration of the peace that followed. Salute their service, honor their hope. Join us virtually for the events on September 2nd, 2020. For further information, go to 75thww2commemoration.org.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of the Second World War.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.